following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended
for children.
The first time.
You did it on the first time. It's because Matt's not here.
He's so imposing.
Extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
We probably should have talked to him about
that. Guardians of the Geekery Podcast. Matt Starnslord.
Nope.
Not appearing in this episode. Me.
The Giddy Geeker.
Woo!
And Tiffany, the technician.
Hi!
She's here, folks.
Is a strict progression of cause to effect.
Or is she?
From a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. And now...
Darn.
Damn right they shot first. The hosts of Guardians of the Geekery.
Keep it a little PG here. Woo! Okay, so episode 157. There's really no significance to that number. That's too bad. Our special guest tonight is Todd Muldrew from Queen City Game Club.
Hi.
And the Children's Defense Fund Freedom School Program. And before we even get into who you are and what you're doing here, I'm going to turn it over to the Giddy Geeker, and we are going to put you through some questions.
Yeah, we're going to launch right into the rapid-fire response round. I'm about to ask you a series of questions. We ask that you answer with a simple word or phrase. Short answer preferred. If you don't come up with an answer in a reasonable amount of time, we will put an answer for you. Today's answer will be rutabaga. And keeping count of the rutabagas in your life will be Tiffle's Tenenbaum over there.
I'm ready.
So here we go. Last song you listened to?
Cake by the Ocean.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
MC Hammer.
Ooh. Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Can't touch this. What was the last concert you went to?
Brandi Carlile.
All right. Who is your favorite Superman actor?
Oh, Christopher Reeves.
Okay. Is that a question or an answer? Do you consider yourself a geek, a nerd, a dork, or something else?
Jack of all, master of none.
Okay. Who is your girl crush?
Alyssa Milano.
Ooh. And who is your favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Raphael.
Okay. Didn't Nancy have that?
She didn't
question.
Have any. And then we said name a Renaissance painter, and
she
came up with like
Monet or Rembrandt. That was right. Okay.
Not one of the two.
Who is the best sci-fi captain?
Malcolm Reynolds.
There you go. What bad guy would you rather be?
Hurry, it's gonna be rooted.
I know. You're doing so good. You're so close.
It would be from Into Darkness. Khan. But not Khan.
Khan but not Khan.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
All right, so we're gonna give you one day's notice before we stick you on an island with a solar powered, battery operated iPad.
Okay.
What movie are you gonna watch over and over again?
Demolition Man.
What musical album or collection are you going to listen to over and over again?
Prince's Greatest Hits.
We haven't had that one before. What book would you read over and over again?
Is it just one book or a whole series? Yes.
You could. Well, we've allowed collection
series.
Harry Potter.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. And what video game that you can play on a tablet?
Civilization.
That'd be good. You can build things.
Yeah,
I'm now going to build a town.
I might learn something. All right, little people, you work building me a boat so I can get off of this island. Yes.
Yes. You know.
So you survived.
No rutabaga. Your bank account was zero, so congratulations on that. You're good at the games, which is probably good. So tell us who you are and what the heck you're doing here.
I'm Todd Muldrew, and I am president of the Queen City Game Club. And we are a bunch of gamers in Charlotte that play strategy board games. And what I'm doing here tonight, I guess, is... So a few years ago, I was at an event with Susie Gorman, and she was talking about volunteering, and she said, you know, a lot of people think community service has to be, you know, difficult, challenging, hard, you know, uncomfortable even.
Court ordered.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You speak with knowledge? No. Okay, just checking.
But so what she said was, find that thing you're passionate about and figure out a way to turn that into service. So I was like, you know, I really love board games. I play with a bunch of board gamers. And surely there's a way, there must be people out there that I could help by playing board games. So I happen to know my wife's church works with Freedom School, which is like a group in Charlotte that works with, you know, at-risk kids during the summer to keep them up to speed so that when they come back in the fall, they haven't lost any progress, whether through reading or just exposing them to new ideas and, you know, new skills. So I reached out to some of the people there and said, hey, I like to play board games, and I'm just wondering if there's a way that we could help, that we could play board games with these kids. And they said, well, sure, we've got a couple of empty slots. We could put you in for, you know, two sessions, one with K through two, and then one through with third through fifth graders. And so we did. We brought in some games, and we played with about 100 kids that summer.
Wow.
And they reached out to us the next year without us even asking and said, that was so great what you did last year. We'd like you to come back for four sessions. So we did that, and then it's grown every year since then to the point where we've donated games now to the school. And so we come in early in the year and play the games with the kids and teach them how to play, and then they can play in their classrooms. And this year, for the first time, we've added middle schoolers. So we've, you know, some of the games we're playing with the younger kids, I don't know if you're familiar with Callisto or Love Letter.
Yeah.
And Forbidden Island, which is kind of like Pandemic, but with, you know, you're trying to get treasure.
Right.
I'm trying to keep them kind of kid-friendly themes. Suro, the game with the path where you've got little tokens. Anyway.
Yes. We've played that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So with the middle schoolers, we're doing Catan and Ticket to Ride because they're old enough where they can kind of grasp these more complex strategies. But it's just great critical thinking skills for them, and they're engaging with us and talking with us, and, you know, we help, you know, we don't just play with them, we help coach them, like, well, what would happen if you put your token over here? What would happen if you played that card, and help them think through the decision-making process? So it's just been great. And so this year we have about 116 kids we're working with and on about seven dates. So, and we'd spend about 2 hours each day with the group of kids.
And you're looking for some volunteers to help you, right?
We are, definitely, yeah. We love having people come help. You can, if you contact me through, I think it'll be in the show notes, or through the Queen City Game Club on Meetup, we're happy to have volunteers for July. We have several dates in July that we're doing it, but we also do this every summer. So even if, you know, you don't have time this summer, but you're just interested in helping out, we can definitely get you on the email list for next year to volunteer.
And it may be a cool idea for other school districts if you're listening to us and you're not local to the area. So, so typically how many... So you do it for 100 kids. Mm-hmm. How many of you are usually there trying to do this?
Well, it's 100 kids over the whole summer. So,
okay.
So each session, like for K through 2 and 3rd through 5th graders,
I'm
there's
just,
usually like 25
kids. I was just
like,
they could revolt on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Especially middle schoolers.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, the middle schoolers seem to be the most calm. Like, they're interested in playing the games, whereas the K through 2, sometimes they want to... They just came from basketball, and they wish they were still playing basketball. So they can be a little more rambunctious. And so we have to pick shorter games with that take less attention span. But, yeah, so usually I'd say about 25 kids in a group. And we usually try to have six or seven volunteers there so that we can really work with them in groups of two or three.
And you said that you've been doing this for how many years right now?
I want to say this is our fourth year doing it.
Oh, wow. So, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And it's, like I said, it's just great that I have this passion for games that I can use to give back.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, another way we do it, this may be off subject a little bit, but we also do Extra Life. Are you guys familiar with that?
No.
So this is two ways the club has found to try to, like, you know, turn it into a service project, our love of games. Every fall in November, there's an international effort called Extra Life. And it started with video gamers who were wanting to play video games for a girl in Texas who was dying of cancer. And they raised money for her treatment through her local children's hospital. And, you know, her cancer went into remission, but then, you know, later on came back and she passed away. But they decided in her honor they would keep doing this. And so it's built up every year. And basically they work with children's hospitals all over the world. And so Levine is our local one. And we do a fundraiser for Levine Children's Hospital every year. And we started this, I think, 3 years ago. So basically, we play games for 24 hours to raise money for kids. And we went from $2,500 the first year, which, you know, it's not... But we were like, hey, we're just starting, to $5,000 to $7,500 last year. And last year, we started pulling in partners like Potions and Pixels.
Mm-hmm.
and Carolina Tabletop Games. So we kind of work together, and so we're trying to turn it, like, Seattle has an amazing, like, Seattle-wide Extra Life guild. And so we're working with Carolina's Healthcare Foundation to try to, you know, build a Charlotte guild that will encompass all the gamers in Charlotte who want to participate in any way, you know, to raise money for living. So.
What's the date for the one?
November 4th, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I think I put it, it might be in the show notes later.
Yes,
absolutely. Absolutely be in the show notes later.
Wait, why do you keep committing show notes stuff? Are you the one putting the show notes in? No.
No, but that's why I'm committing show notes
stuff. But yeah, they have, Extra Life has a website where you can sign up and find more information. And I'll make sure to get you the Facebook group for Sarah Richardson, who's our local Carolina Healthcare Foundation organizer, who's helping to put the guild together.
That is awesome.
So, yeah, no, because, I mean, we do board games once a month, so we definitely have people that play more than that, but we do it once a month, so, because we have other things that go on, too, so.
What do you guys like to play?
So the board game night that we do, we tend to keep it a little bit more social.
Mm-hmm.
I've played Settlers of Catan and stuff, but that can be a little too long. We like to keep it to more the half an hour to hour games, because we do it from 6 until 11. And so that way it gives people chances to kind of float around to different ones. Plus, some people will come in later.
Oh, that's great.
And so we want people to be able to jump in. So we do, like, Bunchkin. We always have at least one or two sessions of Red Dragon in. I rep for them. And then we have, you know, usually there's about 8 games going on throughout the night. So Muggs on Park Road has been very generous. They let us use the whole space.
Basically take them over.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I almost had to kick some people out of a table. I try really hard not to do that, but it does say reserved on every table, so sometimes people camp on it, and we have to go up and be like, sorry, you can't sit here. But yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. But so just to go back to the freedom part, for the volunteers, what time of day are you looking for?
This is the more challenging thing for, I think, for a lot of people, is it is from about 12:30 to 2:30 or 2:45 during the day. So it does mean an extended lunch break, or if you have flexible hours, those are the kind of people we're looking for.
If your company lets you do service hours.
Exactly, right. And also, you know, if you can find a buddy, or we can find you a buddy where maybe you only have an hour, you could come in from 12:30 to 1:30, and then we could have somebody else take over from 1:30 to 2:30. Except for the middle schoolers who are playing the longer games, for the K-2 and 3rd-5th, we can definitely do hour shifts, because we actually bring in 2 groups of 25 kids during those 2 hours. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so I know you said that was challenging. What is some of the other challenges that you've seen, and maybe what are some of the stories that you've taken away from it?
It's been really great to see some of the same kids every year and see them grow, and they'll come up and say, oh, I remember that game. That's the game with the castles. I really want to play that. Or that's the game with the dragons. I really want to play that. That's been really wonderful. You know, as far as a challenge, I think, you know, some of the kids don't speak a lot of English. And so we've had to work with them either, you know, it's great with Love Letter. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but they have the reference card has both the words in English and Spanish. And so we'll be able to give them the Spanish card, and then they'll have a friend who we can say, like, all right, I'm going to explain the rules. Will you help me translate to your friend? Because unfortunately, I don't know Spanish. I wish I did. But, you know, I think part of they're trying to help the kids, you know, stay conversant in English, mm-hmm. because that's what happens during the summer, is they go home and no one is speaking English. So when they come back to school in the fall,
they have to kind of
relearn
it.
Yeah. But, you know, to help them learn the game, in addition to hearing us speak English, we're also wanting them to help them understand what's going on, so they have a good time and they are getting the critical thinking skills we want. So we're fine with, you know, helping them learn it in Spanish.
So how do you pick your games?
That was a process, too, where we had to pick something that we knew kids that age could play, but also wouldn't necessarily be offensive to anyone. Like, you know, I'll tell you the story. One of the games I had wanted to suggest was a game called Castle Panic. I don't know if you've played that.
I think I've heard of it, yeah.
It's a cooperative game, mm-hmm. right, where you have a wizard's tower and you're being ambushed by monsters coming at you. And my kids love it when they were young, and I've played it with other young kids. You know, and you have card. Basically, the board is divided into 4 sectors of colors and then rings. And you have cards in your hand that affect the monsters in the various rings. And because of some of the sponsors and some of the parents were a little uncomfortable with this idea of it being dragons and monsters and would there be spells, and I don't know if that's the sort of thing we want at this. And so I was like, okay. Like, personally, I don't have a problem with that, but I understand people who do. And so I was like, I want to respect their wishes and try to find something that's generic and non-offensive. So, you know, that's kind of what we've done. So, but yeah, a lot of, I guess, as far as
maybe
choosing...
guillotine is in the
yeah,
game,
right.
You
know? Yeah.
Cards Against Humanity.
I don't see that on the elementary school level at all. So.
Well, I was really excited by Batman Love Letter until my wife pulled out the cards and she's like, have you seen Harley Quinn? We don't necessarily want a bunch of fifth grade boys, you know, playing this card set. So I was like,
I'm sure the fifth grade boys want you to.
Right, exactly. So that was disappointing because, I mean, I would have no problem showing my kids that art. Me, like, look, it's a comic book character. But I didn't want any parents coming back and saying, like, my son, all I could talk about was this, you know, woman's cleavage he saw today at school. And I was just like, okay.
It's hard sometimes. I have nieces and nephews that are much more conservative than I am, and so I want to show them all these different games, and then I'm like, oh, that might not go over so well.
Can't do that one.
Can't do that one. Right. Yeah. And even like with telestrations, we don't always have good people drawing.
Right.
And I'm like, one time I brought it to somebody's house and realized somebody, not mentioning any names, Danny, had erased all of the pictures, and he had a tendency to be over eager with anatomy. So, I think that's a safe way to say it. So, so trying to do that. But definitely, there's so many cool games out there, even like Munchkin and stuff, although some of the cards are snarky, but teaching some skills about like looking ahead and seeing who's doing what. So.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, is just working with them to help them, you know, think through their turns without, you know, okay, so Forbidden Island is a good example. Like, if you've played Pandemic or Forbidden Island, you know the biggest challenge is not running the game, right? So you always have that one person who's like, no, you should move your people here and do this, and then your turn will be perfect, and then she'll do this, and she'll do that, and we'll win. So trying to work with we play Forbidden Island with the third through fifth graders. You know, Pandemic wasn't really an option because we couldn't be like, hey, Daddy, we had the world attacked by disease today. So instead we did Forbidden Island because it's basically the same game. And working with them to say like, okay, well, what do you think if, instead of being like, move your piece here, you'll win. We have to say like, well, what would happen if you moved your piece here? You know, and ask them to think through that process of like, okay, well, would it be better if you moved here? And if there is one kid who tries to dominate, kind of saying, okay, well, that's great, Miguel, but let's hear what Sarah has to say, you know, and what she thinks she should do. So.
That is a life skill
that is
valuable, because even now at game night, sometimes I'm kind of like, okay.
It's my turn.
I'm the game master explaining the rule. You don't need to re-explain it to the pretty girl sitting next to you.
Right.
It's okay.
Exactly.
She could play her own pieces.
Yeah.
She's smart enough. And she's brave enough, and gosh darn it, I think she can handle it.
So
it's great to see that happening. So, and obviously the response, as you said, has been really strong.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully have you had any cool stories from it?
I think that's the, I guess I was thinking about, you know, the kids that come back every year and are excited, you know. Gosh, I wish I had just like an
Rutabaga.
Awesome story. Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah, there you go, Rutabaga. The cool thing was working with the middle schoolers this summer. Like, we just did this a couple days ago. So it's like, I love the one kid. So I had a new instructor come in, a new volunteer to play Ticket to Ride with me. And he played it a lot. And so the first game, I was a little worried he wasn't pulling his punches with the kids because he ended up just crushing us all. And I was like, okay, well, hopefully it'll work out. But what was cool, I had time to play a second game, and Miguel was one of the kids we were playing with, and he came in within 2 points of John in the second game. So he'd obviously learned a lot from what John had done, and he wasn't discouraged, he was excited. So that was really cool to see that, like, you know, he'd learned a lot just by watching, we told him, we'll come back in July. He said, oh, I'll beat you next time. You know, so it's just really neat to see them get excited about these games and wanting to play.
So how often does your game club meet?
All the time.
so it's grown. Just an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
And where do you meet?
Well, okay, so I'll tell you that story. I had played I played board games a lot when I was younger and through college, and then I kind of got into Magic the Gathering, and then I got into video games. And so my board game playing, because we'd moved a lot, we moved to Virginia and then moved to Charlotte. I grew up in Knoxville. So we settled in Charlotte, and I met up with a bunch of my old Knoxville buddies, and they were playing Catan, which I had never experienced. And so I was like, oh, this is amazing. And so I thought, you know, I've got to find some people in Charlotte to play this with. So I went to Meetup, and there were a handful of groups at that time, but one of them was Queen City Game Club, and they had just started like in April of 2011. And they had this group called Beer and Board Games. I'm like, those are two things that I love. And that was at the Waldhorn Restaurant in South Charlotte.
Oh, right.
Yeah, right. So, and they have a loft there where, my understanding as the story goes from Alex, who founded the club, is they were basically like, board games, we love board games in Germany, we'd love to have you guys come. So I went there and met a lot of those people and loved it and got involved there. And that became so popular that we added a second night and then a third night. And pretty soon we were kind of like filling up the Waldhorn to the point where it was almost getting not fun to play because there were so many people. And I'm sure you've experienced this too. So we started looking for other venues in which to play. So I'd say right now we have three events at the Waldhorn every month. We do librettos, you know, off Park Road twice a month. Mm-hmm. We do Fitzgerald's Pub, actually, in Uptown. And that's what we've reached the point. We have like 2,000 people on the books, but I'd say really it's closer to 300 active members when you look at people who come regularly.
Right.
So, but we've had restaurants start to reach out to us now. And say, hey, would you like to come and do an event at our place? So that's kind of...
Yeah, it gets kind of hard sometimes too, because then, like for us, we do our charity event. And so we have people that want to invite us out there and...
Mm-hmm.
They're in direct competition with somebody who's been sponsoring us for 2 years. And right. It's like, it's not that we're ignoring you, but we're kind of ignoring you because, you know, we've got this relationship and I don't know how they would feel about us, like, showing up at your place.
Right.
And besides which, sometimes the crowd age is a little different. I mean, geeks are geeks, right? We're a little bit socially awkward. So if you get too hipster on us, we're kind of like, that's too much like high school. Well, we've been there.
Yeah, right.
So.
Well, and that's what we try to make sure we have a host that's dedicated to be there every time. You know, we've been fortunate to have a lot of great people come in, but like I can't. I've got two small kids and, you know, my wife, and if I was like at every event we hold.
Oh, absolutely.
I just feel like, don't bother coming home, right? Yeah. So like
just live at the restaurant.
Yeah, right. So every time we get like a new event, I'm like, well, that'd be a great venue, but we've got to find somebody who's willing to say, I'm going to be there every month for the next 3 years.
That is truly one of the biggest challenges, I think, cuz I know for us, when I first started the Geeks, I had been on Meetup before. Yeah. I had been on Meetup in Denver. I had been a member. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved out back to South Carolina, I was like, I'm lonely.
Yeah,
right. Even though I was living in a town that I had gone to high school and college with, all those kids had like moved away.
Yeah.
And so I started a book club, but it was a book club,
right.
And so it was like once a month. There was like 20 of us and, you know, there was like 600 members online. But It was the same group of 20 people, and that was one thing. But even then, towards the end, I found myself, like, the night before book club, like, staying up till midnight trying to read these books. And, and so then when I moved up here and started the Geeks, at first I was like, well, I'll be at every event. And then people were like, well, I would organize it, and then I'd let them. And all of a sudden, it would be like, I had people that were posting events, but they weren't going.
Right.
And so the new members were, like, showing up and they couldn't find anybody.
Right.
And so, we're in the 3000s as well.
Right, right.
And so you get to that point where you're like, you have people saying, hey, I'll do this event for you. And it's like, okay, that's great. I need to meet you.
Right.
I need to talk to you. I need to know who you are because I'm letting you put our group's name on your event. And,
well, I think that's what a lot of people don't understand is even though we're fun clubs, we're supposed to be fun, but we do have a brand to maintain, just like any nonprofit or any business. And so, like, when you put your name on an event and people go and they have a bad time, they're like, well, I don't want to go anymore. They're
hanging out with those geeks
anymore. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. And so that's definitely been it. But, like, now we've got the book club. They've been running for years, and we have the trivia group, and they've been running for a while, but... It was funny. My boss came up to me today and he's like, hey, you know that Fabo coffee house? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, do you geeks go there? I'm like, actually, we do. Every Thursday night, there's a group that goes. And he says, yeah, I heard some of the waiters talking about how loud they get, but that they were good, but they were loud. And I was like, he's like, and especially this one guy laughs really loud. I'm like, oh, that would be Sherman. because Sherman has told us he's been on the decibel scale. And he was like, really? So he went back to the coffee shop today and he was out talking to the owner and he said something like, hey, so I heard that some of the geeks are really loud on Thursdays. And he says, oh, Sherman laughs really loud. And I was like, so I had to message Sherman and be like, you know, it's nothing like being at work and having somebody come up and know you. And nothing to do with an event that I host, but that Sherman and Bethany host. So it was pretty funny.
And if you listen to any of our podcasts that were recorded at Con Carolinas, you'll
hear Sherman. Because he was one of our guest audience.
Right.
Plus he was on the podcast about the trivia night. So.
True.
Yeah, so he's awesome. And he will be on our next anniversary podcast because he was on right before and there was a mix-up and he didn't know the time. And I am sorry, Sherman, because I know you listened. So anyway, so your date, you have several dates in July. You're looking for people. They can contact you.
Mm-hmm.
And we will put that in the show notes for you. And we'll also put the dates that they're looking for. So if you want to check that out and be willing to help, that's good. If one board game night through the geeks is not enough, there are other great groups out there. And then certainly
we'd be happy to have you.
We'd love to have you guys at the Geek Gala. We have a board game room
That'd be
at
awesome.
That night. Okay. So you guys can come and hang out and play games.
Wonderful.
For charity.
Yeah.
So raise money for charity for us. So and then, of course, Everlife. We'd love to partner with you guys on that. So without further ado... Thank you, Todd.
All very much.
We're going to have another episode tomorrow. would you stay overnight in the garage? And
sure.
Hang out for that? Your wife won't mind that, right?
No, yeah. It was
just staying at Waldhorn that was awkward.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you got caught up in a game of Catan.
It was like a 24-hour game of Catan.
That's
epic. We put all the expansions out.
we added Munchkin to it, and it just became really bizarre. So,
and with that, I'm pushing the button.
In theory. For more information, push the button three times. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery and on Twitter at CLTGOG. Music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Lock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstoffer. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.